we were all pioneers in a field that the most exciting thing for a researcher to work on is something that nobody's ever done anything on before. It's really less fun to find out that somebody, you know, came up with cold fusion and you're the second person. You don't want to ever be the second person working on something that's really new and exciting. And the evangelism came from the fact that we felt like we had an opportunity, and I felt like the DSP committee kind of was the we I always think of, the IEEE DSP committee, to really go out and mold, shape, form, and make this. Now, you don't own any monopoly. Any university person, anybody can come in on there. But we had the concentration of people in those early years who did all the work, who managed all the work, who knew all the work. And that's I don't care where you are anywhere else. I mean, there's some great people who did some really neat stuff at Tom Parks and Sid Burris at Rice. I can name lots of examples. John Markle on the West Coast, et cetera. But they are isolated. Here we are. Think of this group of 15 or so people meeting every 6 weeks and having, not meeting to have your usual waste, you know, BS meeting. We discussed in some meetings, we even let people say, what's the hottest thing that's going on right now? This was people who were excited. They went out. If you look at, I'd be willing to bet from 1967 till 1980, if you look at the outside courses taught, these 13 people probably taught an unbelievably disproportionate share of them. They wrote an unbelievably disproportionate share of the new technical articles, and contributed a disproportionate share of the material. Yet we were all evangelists. We fed on each other. I mean, every 6 weeks it came back, and the excitement level was always at a pitch. I mean, think about what was coming. I've been on committees where after 2 years you barely see a little written report. In the 13 years that I can think of, we have, 5 books, a terminology article, 4 successful workshops. And these are not just we organized the workshop. You know, anybody can do that, okay? We created workshops. We created, every one of those was orchestrated. We didn't just say, send us your papers and we're going to act as the paper keeper. We orchestrated them. We said, what are the hot topics? Who should be giving those talks? Every one of them had the key people doing the work talking about the hottest things in the field. And that's exciting. And, you know, I remember once organizing a workshop for the National Academy of Sciences on human-machine voice interaction. And I got a group of the top people that I could think of in the world in speech as a steering committee to do this. And I put it together and I said, if you had your wildest hope of getting, you know, we knew we could have about 30 or so speakers in a 3-day meeting on a bunch of topics. And all of them were hand-chosen. I said, who would they be? And we chose them. And we said, you know, and again, when you choose people who are the world leaders, who really, really are good, you're lucky when you get a 50% hit rate. Okay? And, you know, they got to be there at that right time and be willing to do it and travel out to California. We hit a 100% hit rate, okay? It's that same feeling, okay? Why do we do it? Well, we had the right people, and it was absolutely an elite event. This is the National Academy of Sciences. The United States is sponsoring it. Everybody knows how prestigious they are, et cetera. This is what we were like there. We would say, who is the right person? You know, the Arden House won the first one. We wanted Dick Garwin, who was one of the people who was the catalyst of he was at IBM, And in fact, the way the FFT came about is, you know, he was a very high-level IBM person. He went to government committees, found out John Tukey was representing the same person there. John said, I've got these ideas from, you know, that I heard about, and, you know, and I'm developing this, and I need some bright young mathematician to help me out on some of this. Garwin went to Cooley, and he talked about it. The first thing we said is, everyone should understand the history of the FFT. And Dick Garwin came back. And he was a senior executive at IBM. And he came to a damn technical meeting. He's probably, you know, hadn't been involved in that in years. And you know, sort of poured his heart out for about 45 minutes, telling us what were the details, you know, what led to Cooley from IBM, a young PhD mathematician, nothing to do with speech, nothing to do with Bell Labs, merging with John Tukey, you know, a world-famous statistician, you know, one of the, you know, and had nothing to do with John Tukey from Bell Labs. He was a Princeton adjunct professor. And he and Garwin went on, you know, really neat stuff. Every time we invited anybody, they were there. I don't think we ever had any, you know, we could ask somebody to come from Germany because they had been doing some neat stuff in analog filter design. They came. They dropped, you know, didn't make a difference in the middle of academic year. They came. Everybody knew that this was the group of people who really were making it happen. Inventing the future, creating it, envisioning it, and it didn't mean we were right. I mean, we were right because the fact is when you have enough good people together, you tend to be right. I think it's an effect of really good people feed on each other. They challenge each other. I mean, I used to go away from these meetings and say, I had a job on the side, yet I'd go work on, I remember the terminology paper. I mean, I worked round the clock for probably about 8 or 10 weeks, you know, because we knew we needed another version and we needed all sorts of stuff in there. People worked like the Dickens on this, unpaid. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a love of what we were doing. It was this concept of, we were the pioneers. We had an opportunity to do something you don't often get a chance in life, to define a field.